This is The Takeaway, and I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Now, there are at least four generations now in the workplace. Boomers, Gen X, Millennials, and Generation Z. Now, millennials make up more than one-third of the U.S. workforce in the U.S., but the youngest boomers aren't quite ready for retirement. They're staying at work longer than previous generations. Meanwhile, the 20-something Gen Zers are on the way, but they're a little bit less likely to be working than previous generations at the same age. Last week, in one of the Takeaway's editorial meetings, a producer brought up a recent New York Times article by Emma Goldberg. It's titled, "The 37-year-olds are afraid of the 23-year-olds who work for them." And it got our team talking about generational differences, about the workplace, and just so you know, we have the whole range of ages, boomer to Z, right here at The Takeaway. So we asked you if you felt a generational divide in your workplace.
Hi, this is John from East Hampton. Yes, I believe that the various generations in the workplace have somehow been disruptive. You know, I was born in the 60s. I learned my work ethics in the 70s and 80s. And I can't relate to any of these people. They're like, they want to play ping pong in the middle of the day. And I'm like, are you nuts?
This is Lacey from Jeffersonville, Indiana. I am an elder millennial. I was once chewed out by a boomer manager for sending an email instead of calling him to ask for clarification on something. He claimed in an email reply that it takes 20 minutes to write a two-sentence email and it's much quicker to call. In fairness, it probably did take him 20 minutes to draft an email because he was a hunt-and-peck typer and didn't understand computers at all.
Did she post you public or PM you?
I don't know.
Let's look at her page.
WWW.
Got it.
This is Katrina from Maplewood, New Jersey. I am Generation X, born in 1972, and I'm a professor now teaching the 19 and 20-year-olds. And I find myself sounding like my parents, talking about when I was younger and how things were back in my day. But then I do work in consulting for people who are often older than I am, and they think I'm young and fancy. So it's interesting to deal with that on a regular basis. I'm sort of stuck in the middle, but I kind of like it that way.
I want to be your assistant.
Really? You hate it here.
So do you.
Hi, this is Josh from Edwardsville, Illinois. I'm a millennial. I'm 37, and I think it's important that boomers hear that. I'm a millennial, and I'm 37, right? I'm almost 40.
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Boulder, Colorado. I am 56, so I am a Gen Xer by 1 year. I don't see any generational divides. I feel like, yeah, I don't feel that at all. I don't know why this is such a big conversation. And I work with people much older than me, much younger than me. My boss is 25 years younger than me.
How do you do, fellow kids?
What?
Listen, we always love to hear from all of you. So thanks for being in the conversation. Now let's go ahead and dig in and interrogate this idea of generations and whether they're really affecting workplace dynamics. Lindsay Pollack is a career and workplace expert and author of the book, The Remix, How to Lead and Succeed in the Multigenerational Workplace. And like me, Lindsay is a proud Gen Xer. Welcome to the show, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me, Melissa. Glad to be in conversation with an Xer.
All right. So first, let's talk about this article that got all of us talking. Is there something unique happening with the kind of generational divide, the little like, get those millennials off my lawn? Or is this just sort of what happens with aging?
Oh, when I saw that article, and I think it has caused tremendous conversation, just like in your workplace at The Takeaway, all I could think was, I remember reading this article 10 years ago about the Xers and the millennials. And I remember reading it 20 years ago about the boomers and the Xers. And if I had been alive, I would have read it about the traditionalists and the boomers. I think the caller who said, you know, we find ourselves saying we walked uphill both ways to school in the snow. It is so true. And we're going to read it again in 10 years with the Zs saying it about the alphas, the next generation. So we have been here before, and I just wish it would finally stop.
And that said, aren't there meaningful differences? I mean, look, our music was better, wasn't it?
Well, that's inarguable. I mean, obviously, there, of course, are differences. But the way I like to frame it, if I'm walking into a company that's struggling with generational diversity, is it's not better or worse. It's not good or bad. For instance, the story about emailing or calling on the phone, it's just different. And so if you take this as another element of diversity, equity, and inclusion, the fact that somebody has 20 years of experience and somebody else has 20 minutes of experience should not be a judgment. It's simply a difference. And it's a difference in the experiences that you've had. And it's a difference in your expectations. So if I walked into The Takeaway or NPR 20 years ago, I would expect different technology to be sitting on my desk than if I started as an employee today. I might not even expect to have a desk. That's just a difference in the reality that we are part of. And in some ways, I think it's helpful to think of it like cultural differences. We seem to accept that someone who grows up in a different country experiences the world differently and might have different opinions or practices. In some ways, the United States is a different country if you were born in 1960 than if you were born in 1990.
All right. So that's useful. I want to kind of break this down and walk through this a bit. So one possibility is that what we're looking at is simply life cycle effects, right? That folks, no matter what their birth year, are different in their 20s than in their 50s than in their 70s, right? But then you've also laid out for us the kind of structural changes, which is everyone 20, 50, and 70 is dealing with new kinds of technologies at any given point in time. And then there's a third possibility that we're actually shaped by those sort of core coming of age moments. So I do think about Gen Xers, or at least sort of my portion of the Gen Xers, you know, coming out of college and into the workforce, or even out of high school and into the workforce during a booming economy. I mean, we could get jobs, not necessarily easily, but certainly much more easily than, for example, millennials. And I wonder if that impacts and affects then sort of forever how we think about what a job is.
Absolutely. And even before Xers, boomers came into an economy where companies offered a lot of benefits. And the majority of traditionalists before them had a pension plan. So if they stayed with a company, they retired with income for the rest of their lives. Millennials and Gen Zs will never have that. Millennials face student loan debt, you know, the most challenging economic recession, the Great Recession, the pandemic, that's a different economic reality. So what you graduate into from high school or college stays with you, economists have proven, for many, many years afterward. And I think it's not just what's in your bank account, it's your mindset about whether the world is going to be a welcoming place, you know, an abundant place, or whether it's going to be really challenging.
All right, I want to also just walk through some of the stereotypes. Let's listen to what one of our callers had to say.
I'm a millennial. The generational divide in the workplace kind of boils down to, you know, Gen X is very meh. Boomers think they know everything. Millennials are very idealistic. And Gen Z seems to just be doing it for the lulz, and I respect it.
Doing it for the lols. for the non-Zers listening, that's the LOLs, the laugh out louds, right? So I wonder about those stereotypes. I mean, clearly, as you point out, if we were stereotyping a culture, a racial identity, a gender, or a sexuality in these kinds of ways, we would see that as deeply problematic. But we do make these kinds of stereotypes about generations.
I want to echo that. If I came on your show, Melissa, and said women are so meh, right? I mean, you would kick me off. We would just never do that. And with generations, somehow it's become acceptable. And I don't think it should be. You know, one of the stereotypes that I thought the caller was going to say about millennials is they expect trophies for participation. And I had a young millennial in one of my programs who said, you know, I didn't give myself the trophies. My coaches and parents and teachers kept giving me trophies. That's the world you told me existed. So don't criticize me for coming of age in that time. And I thought that was so telling, that the times can really shape us. Also, it doesn't acknowledge that people of different races, different genders, different sexual orientations, economic classes have totally different experiences of different eras. So I think the stereotypes, you know, they can be funny, I'll admit it, but they also can do a lot of damage.
All right. So I think this point, and perhaps this is, you know, me as a Gen Z parent with a boomer parent who was, or two boomer parents who were raised during the Great Depression, or just sort of coming out of the Great Depression. And both of them are just absolute, like, financial whizzes. Like, they can stretch a dollar into next week and the week after and the week after. But they also raised, you know, my siblings and I to be a little bit, at least a little bit more sort of willing to spend the dollars, not have to save every single one of them. We certainly, again, we came in of age at a time when one could get jobs. And then my kids, right, who are a Z and an Alpha, boy, their understanding and thoughts about money are even quite radically different than mine. But I'm not sure if that's generational so much as it is kind of American dreamish, right? That if each generation just manages to do a little bit better financially, our young people will have a different understanding of sort of fiscal constraints.
So I titled my book The Remix for this exact reason. The answer shouldn't be the boomers did it right. You know, Melissa, you did it wrong and your kids are doing it even worse. The answer should be there's value in all three of those experiences and perspectives. And so just like a remix song takes a classic and makes it modern, you don't sort of throw away the classic forever and say, well, that song is from 30 years ago, forget it. You say, this song is amazing, but let's modernize it. Let's take the best of all perspectives. So another word that I've heard around, I think it was coined by a blogger named Gina Pell, is to be a perennial, which is that you know your history, but you keep up with times. And I think your family, if you mix all of those different perspectives, is going to be in a really good place because you're not throwing away one generation's perspective. You're incorporating all of them to get the best result.
And in West African traditions, that is the Sankofa. You look back to go forward. I like that that framework. So, Lindsay, I want to talk a little bit about age discrimination in the workplace. I have certainly heard this from both sides. I've heard it from younger people who say they show up in the workplace ready to get their work experience and are often derided as, you know, having sort of an insufficient work capacity. And I definitely hear it from older folks who say after a certain age, it becomes impossible to even change jobs because there is such age discrimination.
Yeah, legally, the definition is discrimination for people over 40. But I have heard examples, as you mentioned, from across the spectrum. And a lot of states are changing the law to acknowledge that age discrimination can happen at any point. And I think it's very real. There was an internet meme that went around that said, you know, we want to hire someone age 20 to 25 with 30 years of experience. Like, that seems to be what everybody wants, right? So it's absolutely true. Or you see it in sort of a more hidden, sinister way, which is that a job listing will say we want someone energetic, right? Which is code for somebody younger, or the caller who made the assumption that an older person would hunt and peck typing or not be good at technology. And I would probably say the biggest feedback that I hear from people of all generations is like a younger person saying, I like to talk face to face. Please don't assume that I only want to do TikTok because I'm 23. Or someone who's 72 who says, I love technology. I'm really adept at technology. Don't judge me because I have gray hair. I think we have to stop these assumptions. You know, someone might have 20 years of experience in an industry and be a millennial. Someone might join that company yesterday and be a baby boomer. You know, there's such a great mix today. And for the record, more people are working older and later into their lives. Look at, you know, the president of our country is the oldest we've ever had. There are more Americans over the age of 85 in the workplace than ever before in history, 85. So people can work much longer. And I think companies that appreciate and acknowledge all the different ages are going to succeed, particularly after the pandemic, which has kind of shaken up everybody's need for workers.
So when you talk about appreciating and acknowledging, I'm also thinking about that job listing sort of that you're talking about there, 25 years old with 30 years of experience. But one of the reasons that companies often want to hire the 25-year-old is because they're less expensive, right? You can actually get sort of entry-level workers in a wide variety of fields who, you know, as you pointed out, older generations might expect things like healthcare benefits, retirement benefits, certain kinds of security packages in ways that younger folks who are coming through for the first time in this radically changed workforce may not expect it. So I'm wondering if there is also a way that sort of the workforce writ large takes advantage of younger workers by not providing them the same securities that older generations secured, for example, through labor unions.
Absolutely. I think the decline of unions, certainly the decline of companies offering pension plans to all employees, many baby boomers, but almost all traditionalists had access to that kind of financial support. And so I don't think it's just young people. I think that the, you know, employment scene is challenging for anybody. There's so many more gig jobs, consulting roles, you know, no health insurance. So there are definitely systemic problems there. I will say one thing that I'm seeing is some industries and companies are embracing people in midlife and older specifically. So to give one example, I went to a plumbing conference. And they said, you know, we're having a really hard time finding 18-year-olds who want to train as plumbers. So we've started promoting the profession to people in their 30s and 40s who want a second career to be entrepreneurial, to work with their hands, to make a difference to the environment. And I think you're going to see more and more industries and companies realize that if they just go for the younger talent, they're not going to get what they want. And if you consider this great resignation, you know, and the war for talent today, companies are going to have to offer higher wages and benefits to get any talent. And I'm hoping that maybe this is the opening that I've been waiting for and hoping for when we do see, you know, increased wages, more power to the employees, and more opportunities for people younger and older who maybe have been marginalized.
All right, let's just do a little advice giving. For folks who are managing in a multi-generational workforce, what are some key things that they should know?
Be explicit in your expectations and boundaries. So if I say, hey, Melissa, get in touch with John, I might mean call John on the phone, and you might interpret that as text John. So if I have a goal of exactly how I want you to do that, I need to be really specific. And the second is make sure that your unwritten rules, whatever those are written. So exactly what time are people expected to show up? What's appropriate dress? What one generation might assume is not necessarily what you as the leader might assume. I was working with a student affairs professional at a college, and he said to his Generation Z students, call me anytime. And so they called it 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And he said, that's not what I meant. Call me anytime up until 10 p.m. because I think that's reasonable. So just don't make assumptions. Be explicit.
Yeah, don't never with the call me anytime. That's not a thing. My door is always open. No, not nope. Always. What about on the other side? If you're a worker who's not yet or maybe just not in management, what are some of the things that you should know about interacting in this multi-generational workforce?
You know, my grandpa used to say, there's a reason you have 2 ears and 1 mouth. Use them accordingly. Listen twice as much as you talk. Again, we make assumptions. Oh, you've been here so long, you must be really traditionalist in your thinking. Maybe not. So to say, why are you doing it that way? Can you show me how you learned that? What do you think of this? It doesn't mean that you have to change your opinion, but really being open to other perspectives is really powerful. And what I would say to every individual is to think about having a multi-generational network of professionals. A lot of us hang out with people in a variety of ways who are kind of exactly like us. If you want to succeed in this very multi-generational work environment, make sure that you know people professionally of all different ages.
Lindsay Pollack is a career and workplace expert and author of the book, The Remix, How to Lead and Succeed in the Multi-Generational Workplace. Thanks, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.